Welcome back to Chronology, an episode-by-episode recap of WWF Monday Night Raw from episode one until some corporate lawyers tell us to knock it off. I'm Dave Thackera. I'm sort of a casual wrestling fan, although there's an exception to that, and we'll get into that in a little bit. That there, that's Neil Trama. He's more of, I know everybody who's ever stepped foot in the ring. Hi, Neil.
Yeah, I've seen way more of these shows than I care to admit. Hey, Dave, how you doing on this beautiful spring day?
I'm wonderful.
Yeah.
The thing about it is, I'm a little bit tired. I've been yawning all morning because I stayed up past my bedtime last night working on this project for my day job, and I needed some background noise, so I turned on a random ECW pay-per-view. I don't even know which one it is, but it had the usual gang of characters doing a whole bunch of stuff, and let's just say that I was very, very uncomfortable with the amount of chairs meeting head in that particular event.
But the real question is, was random ECW show better or worse than this episode of Raw?
So far, better. So, episode 12 of Monday Night Raw took place April 12th, 1993. Where are we in the wrestling world as this is going on?
Well, we've just finished up with WrestleMania 9, which you wouldn't really know by watching this show because basically none of the major players took part. But Hulk Hogan's the WWF champion. He's nowhere to be seen. And, we're just cruising along here. At some point, we're going to start building to the inaugural King of the Ring pay-per-view. But at this point, we're just sort of chugging along in no man's land between pay-per-views here for the WWF. But perhaps more importantly than what's going on in the real world or in the wrestling world, April 12th, 1993 happens to have been my 8th birthday.
What?
Which hey. I can say that I did not celebrate by watching this episode of Raw. I did celebrate with a birthday party at Top Dog, however. So that was good. That was a plus.
I hope you still have some tokens left over.
I may.
Elsewhere in the world, lesser important events. Bernard Langer from Germany won his second green jacket at the Masters. Chance the Rapper was just about your age. If this is your 8th birthday, Chance the Rapper was born 4 days after this episode aired. And most importantly for me at the time, The Adventures of Superman number 500 was on comic store shelves. That's the one where Superman actually came back from the dead. This is big in my life in 1993. But
so
we are
was
back.
There a period of time in the comic books, like in between Superman dying and coming back from the dead, where just there were Superman comic books with like other people doing things?
Yeah. And no, they took some time off. There was the whole funeral for Superman thing, which the Superman comics covered. And it was a whole thing. It dominated the world in 1993. It did. But for this episode of Raw, we have a live event happening. We are back. We get into the show with a live promo from Money Inc. and the Beverly Brothers as Money Inc. is talking smack. But we are taking place with the action today live from the Mid-Hudson Civic Center in Poughkeepsie, New York. Vince McMahon is back behind the microphone. Macho Man is back behind the microphone. And crap. Yes, Rob Bartlett is back behind the microphone as well.
Yeah, they couldn't just leave him stranded in Vegas permanently. He's back. And WWF here for Raw at the Mid-Hudson Civic Center, which if the Manhattan Center in New York City was the home of 1993 Raw, I feel like the Mid-Hudson Civic Center was like the home away from home. It was like the lake house for Raw in 1993 because they would go there quite a bit as well.
The lake house. I like that. We'll bring that back. Macho fit right in with the Oakland Raiders fans in the black hole. He was wearing black with silver sequins.
Dave, they're the Las Vegas Raiders now. Get it right.
Oh, okay. In 1993, I think they were still in Los Angeles, too. So I'm wrong twice.
Yeah, who cares? Who can keep track?
We start the show with that promo with the Beverly Brothers and Money Inc. and money changing hands in this promo.
Well, yeah, I like this because I think I made note of this last week on the show. This is actually a storyline that started last week that's continuing here. We wondered why the Beverly Brothers were just randomly facing the Steiners last week, and now we get our answer. Money Inc. paid them off to kind of hurt the Steiners and give them a little bit of information on the Steiners so they could be prepared to face them in a tag title match in the future. So I appreciated this, and it'll continue into the opening match of the night here.
Listen, no one ever said continuity was going to be the strength of Monday Night Raw during these days, because last week we were promised Money Inc. taking on the Bushwhackers this week. Spoiler alert, that would not happen, because match number one was Money Inc. taking on the Steiner Brothers. No, that's not true. It's a singles match, although everyone's at the ring. Scott Steiner versus IRS. And Scott Steiner's mullet in rare form. He looks like a stereotypical female high school gym teacher in this particular show.
Well, I mean, let's face it. It's mid-90s wrestling. Mullets will be everywhere. And I was a bit disappointed at the start of this match because it's April 12th, which means it's almost tax day. And when I'm dealing with taxes at my day job, you know, I was really excited to hear IRS's pre-tax day promo. And it was kind of mundane. In fact, he actually just gave out good advice. He's like, just so you know, you can't get an extension to pay your taxes, which is true. People think you get an extension. It's just an extension to file. It's not an extension to pay. So IRS actually passing out good tax advice until the end, where he says that if you lie on your taxes, you're going to have to pay double. I don't think there's a hard and fast rule about that. So nice try, Irwin.
Although this, you're right. This is disappointing because this should be his ultimate evil guy promo.
Right?
April 12th. Give him 5 minutes here.
Yeah, this is his moment. This is his day in the sun, man.
Well, the match started, and since it's a Scott Steiner versus IRS match, and yet Ted DiBiase and Rick Steiner were both ringside, I'm sure they sat politely on their hands and didn't get involved. No, that didn't happen at all. Everyone got into the ring at one point. There was a smudge finish. It was a DQ. And Rick Steiner and Million Dollar Man got in some good shots. But technically, if you're keeping track of the W's and L's, Scott Steiner, winner of this match.
And I will tell you that I was a bit shocked. Maybe not shocked. That might be too strong a word. But I was surprised, because I was fully convinced when I read the little blurb about this show. Peacock now, the WWE Network on Peacock, if you're watching it in the States. The blurbs before each of these shows are like preposterously concise. Like it's like whoever the intern was that had to write these got a bonus for making them as short as possible. So this entire episode was summarized as like, IRS faces Scott Steiner in the ring. Like, that was all that it said. And I was convinced that they got confused between mid-April Raw in 93 and 94. Because I am a giant dork, I am almost positive that IRS faces Scott Steiner in a King of the Ring qualifying match in 1994. So I thought they confused the two blurbs right there. And if you want to talk continuity, you keep listening to this podcast in April of 1994, or I guess it'll be April of 2022, and we'll see if that IRS Scott Steiner match comes around.
You've launched into full internet correction guy. No, yes. Actually, what they meant is match number two, someone named Von Kruss takes on Tatanka. Now, again, Tatanka, they make a big deal about the fact that he is still undefeated and yet still doesn't have the Intercontinental title on his match, on his waist. And he's playing some guy named Von Kruss, who I've never heard of before. So you know who won this match.
Well, Dave, I've actually got to stop you, and I have to chime in because we had a correction from one of our listeners. Yes, listeners exist. And one of them contacted me. It's my old podcast partner on the Place to Be Nation, Jason Sherman, who said he was listening to one of our older shows where Von Kruss made an appearance. And I didn't realize this myself, but Von Kruss is in fact Big Vito, who would be a future WCW tag team champion in the dying days of the promotion and take part in the WWE version of the FBI full-blooded Italian stable in around 2004-2005. So Von Kruss here, early 90s jobber, the future Big Vito. So we do know who he is. It doesn't change the fact that he gets squashed by Tatanka here, however.
You've been speaking for about 45 seconds, and I swear to God, I've never heard any of those names that you just dropped. Not a one. But thank you, Jason Sherman. We appreciate that. The match was short, and then afterwards, you thought it was over, but they keep bringing it back in. Speaking of Italian references, it's the WrestleMania report.
What? Yes, is this the one with Sean Mooney?
Yes, it is.
Yeah. Absolutely.
I don't know how. It is now a full week after the fact, but we're still doing a WrestleMania report.
Well, because the replay is coming up tonight at 10 Eastern and Pacific, Dave. It's WrestleMania that was so good, it's worth seeing twice.
Who wouldn't want to stay up until 1 o'clock in the morning watching arguably the worst pay-per-view of all time? Okay. And pay for it at the time as well.
Yeah. They're like $30.
Yeah.
60 if you watched it the first time.
Which in 1993 could buy you like, you know, a lot of issues of Superman 500. I'll tell you.
Yeah, man. Some Elvis stamps.
We move along because now it's interview time. It's Rob Bartlett taking the microphone and center stage and bringing out the one, the only, Luna Vachon.
Am I wrong? I like this segment.
No. I mean,
come on. What more do you want? You had Rob Bartlett getting knocked to the floor. There was briefly boobies. I mean, come on. This was solid. This was a solid wrestling segment, Dave.
Okay. We'll quote you on that. But Luna spent most of the time just gutturally screaming, talking absolute nonsense. It was like watching someone on PCP on national television. I am a bandit from the wild, untamed future, a place that was before and will be again. I am the ultimate female of the ring. If she wasn't in costume in the ring in Poughkeepsie, New York, she would fit right in. Screaming at people in Times Square. And yet, I would still rather watch her scream than watch Rob Bartlett conduct the interview as he stands there chewing gum like a cow chewing cud.
Well, at least he's supposed to be like an annoying piece of crap, which is what he is here. And this was another missed opportunity for them because I'm fairly certain this is not the last Bartlett appearance, but this would have been another great way to write him off.
Right.
And they had Sherry and Luna chase him off to the back in the middle of their brawl, which, I mean, it does get pretty wild. Clothes get torn here between these women. There really is like there's some side boob. There's a thong. Yeah. This is racy stuff for 1993 WWF.
Which is true. And unfortunately, it's with Luna and Sherry.
Well, come on.
They are clearly setting up some sort of match happening, you know, in the near future with these two.
And then they come back from the commercial with Randy Savage and Sensational Sherry, which is just so weird because, you know, you're the casual wrestling fan and there
but
is.
But even I know that.
You do know that there is a significant history between those two, right?
Well, I know that he at one point was the Macho King and she was Sensational Queen Sherry.
Yes, exactly. So she
was his valet, but I don't know if it like. If they used to date and now they're forced to be together on camera.
Well, yeah, the storyline, not in real life, they didn't used to date, but the storyline was that she was his rebound girl from Miss Elizabeth when they split up for their period there when Macho went heel in the 90s after WrestleMania 5. But, you know, this was, it always cracks me up when that sort of stuff happens, especially in early wrestling where they don't make a big deal about mentioning the past. Mm-hmm. When you have these people sort of cross paths and we're just supposed to pretend that they don't have this massive history together. But that was what it was. And then, we head back to the ring, Dave.
Match number three.
This is funny.
Papa Shango taking on a man named Scott Taylor. This is 1993. If we fast forward about 15 years, that same match would probably happen again and again, although those two men would be known by different names.
Oh, maybe more like 7 years, all right? Let's not get crazy. 7 years.
My
Godfather versus Scotty Too Hottie. How about it?
Oh, it was a bad match. Scott got in some offense, but it was a squash match for Papa Shango. They're still building him up to bury him.
I can't believe that Papa Shango is still like winning squash matches seemingly every other week on this show. I thought he was done like by WrestleMania, but here he is still around. I can't think of anything else notable he does. So I don't think he's around much longer, but he's still keeps showing up every week.
His entrance is cool. His character is kind of cool. But again, it's the WWF in 1993. You kind of know who the big names are. So the fact that he keeps getting matches and keeps getting significant mid-card screen time to me says, dude's got a house in Poughkeepsie and he's just available to work.
Yeah, could be. I mean, I wonder if he was running his strip club in Vegas yet. I don't know.
Maybe. The match came and went, and then match number three comes out. And Neil, we're going to do something from now on. That we used to save this segment until the end of the episode, but I can't. I need to bring it here now. So, Neil, let me ask you something. We need to talk about this next match. It's match number three with a man named Chris Duffy, who's he's just a random dude. And
he is the jobbiest jobber who ever jobbed.
His
guy.
His middle name might as well be Job.
He's pudgy. His hair is terrible. Just his face looks ridiculous. I know that's a horrible thing to say about a man, but I mean, his face just looked ridiculous. He was a major jobber, but no, he's not who we're here to talk about, are we?
No, no. Maybe he's got the house in Poughkeepsie and was available to work. But we are here to talk about, we are here to talk about a man named Friar Ferguson. Other than the fact that this is a very large man, and I'm not talking tall like Giant Gonzalez tall, I'm talking round. They introduce him at 385 pounds, and he was probably a legit 370, 375. Friar Ferguson. Who thought this gimmick was a good idea? Tell me about this guy. Who is he? What's his deal? What's going on?
Okay, well, first of all, the guy himself, Mike Shaw, who basically made a career out of being a wrestling fat guy, he was actually a headliner in Stampede in the late 80s and early 90s in Calgary, which is the home promotion of the Hearts. So he actually mixed it up quite a bit with some of the greatest workers of all time, Bret Hart, Owen Hart, Chris Benoit, British Bulldogs. He was in the mix with all of them in Stampede up in Calgary. He'd end up in WCW, where he played a variety of gimmicks, including Norman the Lunatic and Big Trucker Norm, I think they called him, when he went from being an insane man and then he turned babyface and became a trucker. And then he ends up here for a very brief stint as Friar Ferguson. So brief, Dave. I'm fairly certain this is the one and only match for Friar Ferguson. It certainly is the only one we're going to have on Raw. I don't know if there were any other ones on the syndicated shows, but Mike Shaw himself would stick around.
Hold on. I might need to correct you because the picture for next week's episode on Peacock Network, I think it showed him.
Yes. And I don't think there's a match. Let's just say that, but he is on the show and Mike Shaw himself will be around. He will go on to take on another gimmick later on in the year. And as for who thought it was a good idea, I mean, come on, we all know who it is. Vincent Kennedy McMahon, who thought it was a good idea. See, Vince is famous for, he's always like a bit behind on pop culture, and then he discovers something and thinks it's a good idea. So I can only guess, wasn't the early 90s, wasn't this around the time that Gregorian chants briefly became popular in pop music? Wasn't there that one song? Is it Enigma? Do you know what I'm talking about? Where it's the Gregorian chant, but then there's kind of like a house drum beat with it, and it was a hit. I don't know when that was, but I'm going to guess that it was a hit. And then a year later, Vince found out about it, and then he cooked up the Friar Ferguson gimmick. And then, and this is for real, the Catholic Church objected. So they ditched the gimmick and gave him a new one in a few weeks. But it's either he discovered that Enigma song, or maybe like 25 years after they became a Major League Baseball team, he found out that the San Diego Padres exist and thought that would be a good idea for a wrestling gimmick. I don't know.
Either one or the other. Maybe he had a cappuccino and in the meeting, and that was what inspired him.
Who knows? But yeah, not much to do with the Friar from this point forward.
It was a bad match. It was just
he was horrible all over. It was terrible.
But he won, so there's that. And then afterwards, we go to the WrestleMania video package. Yeah.
Yes, I loved this.
Drunk guys on camera.
It's just proof that when you go to a wrestling show live, even if it's terrible, it's really easy to have a great time. Like, I believed all of these fans. Like, I believe that if I took a trip to Vegas for the weekend with my wrestling fan buddies and we went to WrestleMania 9, I would have had a great time. Like, I think it would have still been fun, even though it was the worst show of all time. Right? Don't you think so?
Yeah, probably. But the beers would have been flowing. And
exactly. That's why it would have been a good show. And, I mean, we got drunk just to review it on our podcast. So, of course, you would have had to be drunk to watch it live. And then there's an appearance at the end of Vladimir the Superfan, who actually gets interviewed on Monday Night Raw. There's a guy, Dave, named Vladimir. He is literally the World Wrestling Federation Entertainment's biggest fan. He appeared at every show at Madison Square Garden for something like 20 or 30 years, always up near the front row. It's a recognizable face. He's the last guy they interviewed on the package. And in fact, he is getting his own documentary on the WWE Network later this year. They gave him like a lifetime fan award at WrestleMania this year to honor him. He's such a big fan of the company. He literally attends every single show. And once I point him out to you, I'll have to send you a picture. You'll notice him in all the shows in the Northeast, especially at the Garden. Vladimir the Superfan. He's here on this episode of Raw.
I can't wait. We wrap up the show, not with Friar Ferguson. We wrap up the show with another interview segment with Money Inc. coming back out and grabbing some microphones.
And they're going to face the Beverleys next week. I guess that's the plan. So see, I like this, the continuity department. See, they started it last week. They continued the angle this week, and we're going to get a payoff next week. It's a little unfortunate that I'm pretty sure this ends the run of the Beverleys as a team that means anything, but at least they get to do something with the tag champs on their way out.
Well, it's like they say in wrestling, when you're retired by the IRS, you're retired by IRS.
Yeah, man, they're going to get written off, baby.
I was over this episode. At this point, I'm like, all right, I'm done. Make it stop.
I didn't think it was that bad. There's some fun to come. I don't know if next week's is any good, but there's fun to come, I'm telling you.
All right. Well, Neil, wrap it up. What kind of closing thoughts do you have about this episode 12 of Monday Night Raw?
I mean, I didn't think it was that bad. It was a paint by the numbers episode of Raw. At least some things happened. I mean, they're not things I particularly care about, like Money Inc. and the Beverleys or whatever Sherry and Luna are going to do. But I'll give Sherry and Luna my MVP award. I'm just going to give Sherry the MVP award. Luna doesn't get the MVP. That promo was like something from the Ultimate Warrior Reject Collection. I'm going Sensational Sherry. Sensational Sherry's boobs. That gets my MVP vote for the show. And, you know, we'll see what happens next week.
Same. Anytime we get possible, definite overboob, possible cleavage, partial nudity, you're going to get my MVP in these early days of Raw. Sensational Sherry, you're my MVP as well.
Neil, oh, baby, there's going to be a lot of Sable MVP votes over the next decade from Dave.
Yes. Yes, there will. Neil, where can people find us?
PlaceToBeNation.com, the Place to Be Nation wrestling feed, or just, you know, easily just Google it. We come up on Google, and you find us in all your favorite podcast, all your podcatcher apps. I have it running on Downcast. I can download it there. Spotify, all the usual suspects. Anchor is where we are, in fact, anchored. So you can find us anywhere on the interwebs. And thanks for stumbling upon us. All the archives are there, including the WrestleMania 9 show that we did a couple weeks ago that I think was actually a lot of fun. So check that out if you haven't been checking out our archived shows. And we'll have more for you next week. We're doing this, right, Dave, week by week. I don't know if at some point we're going to catch up, because the idea was to do this the week the show aired, but then the network hiatus to Peacock kind of ruined that on us. But we'll figure that out over the summer. We'll see how it turns out by the time the summer's up.
And remember, I am a wild bandit from the untamed future.
No, more importantly, remember that Rob Bartlett is almost gone.
And that's a day we will celebrate. Thank you, Neil. Another episode of Chronology in the books.
Take it easy.